Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
What's a secret you'll never tell your partner but are willing to tell strangers? Story one. When I was 14, my grandmother passed away. For years, I had been asking my parents for my own gold necklace. In her will, Graham left me $300 to buy one. It became my pride and joy. I wore it around my neck for 17 years, rarely ever taking it off, maybe three times in all those years. When I met my wife, then girlfriend, she knew how much the necklace meant to me. One day she asked if she could wear it, but after that it never came back. She either lost it or it was stolen. I was devastated, searching the house like crazy for 3 or 4 days. Eventually I gave up, but she was visibly upset about losing it. To ease her guilt and my own feelings, I went to a pawn shop and bought a necklace as close as possible to the original. Then I told her I had found it in the couch cushions. To this day, she believes she got lucky and that the necklace she sees is the one my grandmother gave me. In reality, it's version two. Story two. I never paid for my wife's engagement ring. I went to a custom jeweler to have her ring made. It's a stunning piece that she cherishes deeply, and it wasn't cheap, appraised and insured for about $10,000. At the time, the jeweler was dealing with some serious family issues and was very disorganized. When I went to pick up the ring, I brought my checkbook, ready to pay. She handed me the ring, and I asked who to make the checkout to. She waved me off, saying, "Oh, don't worry about it right now. Just send me a check in the mail." I thought it was odd, but didn't question it. She then rushed off to assist another customer, and I left with the ring. However, she never told me the final price. For 6 months, I texted and called her, asking for the amount so I could send the payment. Every time, there was an excuse. "Oh, I'm out right now. I'll text you later." Her shop was hours away from where I lived, so going in person wasn't practical. After 6 months of trying, I gave up. I figured I had somehow gotten the ring for free. I haven't told my wife because I don't want her to think I took advantage of the situation or to feel the ring is less meaningful because I didn't pay for it. Story three. She once accidentally killed a cat. My wife is a huge cat person, so when she picked me up from a friend's house one evening and we were driving through town, it was devastating when a cat suddenly darted in front of the car. We both heard the sickening thud. She screamed and looked in the rearview mirror where we saw the cat stagger into a driveway. She was distraught and convinced she had killed it. I tried to calm her down, telling her the cat had clearly run across the street and was probably fine. She had plans to meet some friends, and I was taking the car home. She asked me to check the driveway on my way back to make sure the cat was okay. I agreed. On my way home, I drove past the house and parked a few doors down. Sure enough, there it was, sprawled out motionless in the driveway. My first thought was to just go home and tell her I saw the cat happily licking its paws, but curiosity got the better of me. I wanted to check if it was really dead. The house was gated and also operated as a bed and breakfast, so I didn't want to trespass. Instead, I called the number on the sign by the road. By this point, I was fully committed to the absurdity of the situation. The owner answered and I explained that there might be a dead cat in his driveway. I asked if I could check. He was surprised but gave me permission to let myself in through the side gate. I walked in and unfortunately confirmed my fears. It was a big, very dead cat. My plan to tell my wife the cat wasn't there fell apart when I realized the owner now knew about the cat. If he came home and found it, he'd know I left it there. I had to act. Across the street, there was a store. I bought bin bags and rubber gloves, returned to the property, and scooped the poor cat into a bag. Now I had a dead cat in a bag and no idea what to do with it. I couldn't bring it into the car, Who wants a dead cat in their car? So I Googled nearby vets. Luckily, there was one within walking distance. I called the vet to confirm they handled pet disposal, and they said they did. So I walked to the vet's office, dead cat in hand. People passed me on the street, nodding and smiling, completely unaware of what I was carrying. At the vet's office, I asked the receptionist if I could leave the cat with them. She seemed slightly unnerved but directed me to their back door, where I could leave the bag. I paid £50 for the service and walked back to my car, emotionally drained. I sat in the car for half an hour, completely still, trying to process what had just happened. Finally, I texted my wife. No, honey, couldn't find the cat. She must be fine and ran off somewhere safe. See you at home. Ikti, story 4. The time I had an encounter with a snowman in a ditch behind my house. It's not something I'd talk about with anyone, except for the thousands of Redditors and the millions who saw the story I posted here that someone later uploaded to YouTube. But here we go again. It was March 1993, during a massive blizzard on the East Coast. I was young, bored, and ridiculously hormonal. I didn't fully understand those feelings yet, but I knew they were normal for my age. We were out of school for weeks, which felt like forever. I had no one my age around, no girls in my neighborhood, and no internet. Not that I would have dared to browse anything online, even if I'd had access. One evening, the frustration became unbearable. I couldn't bring myself to take care of it in the bathroom. Too much anxiety about someone catching me. My room was off limits, too, since my door didn't lock, and a shut door in my house always invited suspicion. I had to find a solution. So, I put on my snow gear and headed into the wilderness behind my house with a plan. I wasn't entirely sure I'd go through with it, but I wasn't thinking straight either. I found a gully about 15 feet deep, slid down into it, and listened for any sounds of nearby footsteps. Silence. Complete silence, except for the small voice in my head saying, "Don't do this, man." Ignoring it, I got to work. I shaped the snow into a curvy figure, a body with breasts, hips, and a small inlet. It felt absurd, but I was committed now. I unzipped, and within a minute, it was over. Guilt and shame hit me instantly. I quickly erased all evidence, crawled out of the gully, and made my way back home. I tried to forget what I'd done, but to my surprise, I couldn't. Even now, every time it snows, I still think of her. Story 5. When he was away for work for 4 months and I was drowning, I was working full-time, single parenting, and completely overwhelmed. One morning, in my usual exhausted haze, I hurried our 3-year-old out to the car before daycare. My hands were full of stuff, bags, snacks, you name it. I put everything in the car, got in, and put it in gear. As I turned to look over my shoulder to back out, I hit the brakes after moving just 2 feet. The car seat was empty. Panic hit me as I realized I hadn't put our toddler in the car. I turned to see him standing by the passenger door, crying because he thought I was leaving him behind. He had no idea how close I came to accidentally running him over. It was sleep deprivation, stress, and everything else piling on me. But that moment still haunts me. The guilt is unbearable. I'll never tell my husband about it because I don't want him to think I'm a bad mom or to know just how bad things were for me while he was gone. Those 2 feet still feel like the longest distance of my life. Story 6. That I'm miserable. He's a good guy, but after 20 years together, it's clear that we're no longer the right fit for each other. The problem is, nothing is outright terrible. We're not toxic or abusive, so it feels like we've become too enmeshed to change anything. Over time, my political and religious views have evolved drastically, while his have stayed the same. We don't have meaningful conversations anymore. Our S life is still great, but even that feels hollow because I don't feel a real connection with him. We're making long-term plans for retirement, but I feel like I'm just nodding along to whatever he wants. I don't even believe in the future we're planning together, but I go along with it because it feels safer than the alternative. It's not that I think there's someone better out there for me. I'm scared of leaving the stability I've invested so much in. All our retirement savings are in his name, and I don't want to hurt him. Whenever I suggest marriage counseling, he brushes it off as unnecessary and too expensive. So, I stay quiet. I try not to nag, keep the status quo, and remind myself to be thankful for the stability we have. But I'm so deeply unhappy, and I don't know how much longer I can fake it. Story 7. That I've been seriously considering divorce for the past 18 months. She never smiles, never says anything kind, and constantly complains about everything. The only reason I haven't left yet is our two children. I'm almost certain that if I left, her verbal abuse would escalate to physical abuse toward them. Since her hysterectomy 9 years ago, she's completely lost interest in affection. Not just S, though I miss that, but the simple things like hugs, kisses, or even holding hands. She believes buying me gifts will replace the lack of physical connection, but it doesn't. Her close-mindedness has pushed our daughter away. Jean doesn't talk to her mom about anything anymore and confides in me instead. Jean is terrified of what her mother would do if she found out that she's more interested in girls than boys. I work 90 minutes from home and used to have a small apartment near my job to avoid the exhausting 3-hour daily commute. But I had to give it up because she insisted we couldn't afford two households, even though she constantly spends money on things we don't need. She refuses to clean the house, claiming she won't do it if no one else does, and uses her depression as an excuse to avoid any responsibility she doesn't.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Like, if I thought I had a real chance at getting custody of the kids, I'd leave her in a heartbeat. But as it stands, I'm stuck, trying to protect them while enduring the misery of this marriage. Story 8. Maybe not exactly what the question is asking, but I was close friends with my now wife for 4 or 5 years before we fell in love. Side note, yes, getting out of the friend zone is possible, and ironically, it happens if you just be her good friend, avoid inappropriate advances, and genuinely be someone she enjoys spending time with. Back when we were friends, though, I was a heavy drug user, opiates specifically, and I hid it from most of my friends and family as best I could. While we've talked about it in general terms, she doesn't know the full extent of how much I was ruining my life. I stole money from my parents, faced consequences at my job, and am honestly lucky I never got into legal trouble. When we started dating, everything changed. Being with her inspired me to get my life together and gave me something to live for. I've mentioned to her once or twice that being with her saved my life, but I said it in my usual sarcastic way, so she thought I was joking. I'd love to open up to her about that time in my life, but there's so much guilt and trauma attached to it. Every time I think about telling her the full story, I freeze up. It's still something I'm working through, but she'll never know just how much she saved me. Story 9. There has never been a moment where I thought my spouse was unattractive. Not once. Whether it's his quirks, personality, or even during irritating moments, he's always been the most handsome man I've ever seen. I feel so lucky to have him. Even if he's put on a little weight, so have I, it doesn't matter. But on May 26th, 2022, the day we had our son, his first biological child, I fell in love with him all over again. He cried through the entire delivery, never once left our son's side, and was instantly in love with him. He's been a doting, loving dad since day one. That day, I saw him in a way I'd never seen him before. I've never been more attracted to him in my life. It's hard to explain. I know some women experience a rush of hormones after giving birth, but this was different. Watching him take care of our son became my guilty pleasure. I'll never tell him this, though. Why? Because it might change the way he is with our son. Sure, he might say it wouldn't affect anything, but this is my secret. Watching him be such a caring, devoted father has made me fall even more in love with him, and I don't ever want that to change. Story 10. I feel trapped and like I have no control over my life. We got pregnant while in college, and I didn't want to keep the baby. But they did, so we had the baby. If we were going to go through with it, I wanted us to live together, but they insisted we wouldn't unless we got married first. I didn't want to get married, but I relented. One of my lifelong dreams was to get a doctorate degree, but I was told no. I wanted to move out of state to escape my abusive family, but I was told no. When they decided they wanted another baby and I didn't, it led to constant fights until I gave in, and now we have a second child. Sometimes I feel like I'm losing my mind. We argue about things, and they insist I said something I don't remember, or that something didn't happen the way I recall it. I've started writing down conversations because I can't tell if I'm losing my memory from a concussion I had a couple of years ago, or if they're misremembering things too. I feel like I have no control over my life and am just being told what to do. I work full-time, and the household work is split, with them doing more than I do. But they frequently remind me that I'm not pulling my weight, which makes me feel even worse. I feel so trapped and depressed. I often fantasize about running away, but I can't abandon my children. I love them too much to leave, but I don't know how to escape this overwhelming feeling of being stuck in a life that doesn't feel like mine. Story 11. I asked the funeral director exactly where the burial plot was and went to the cemetery before the funeral for my wife's brother's wife. Thankfully, the hole was already dug and no one was around. I slid back the plywood cover and took the most satisfying ishich of my life into her grave. If I could have done it 1,000 more times, I would have. She destroyed my wife's brother, tore his family apart, and was an absolutely horrible person. Everyone hated her, but I could never admit to anyone that I literally defiled her burial vault before they lowered her in. If they'd chosen cremation, everyone who knew her would have been there with gas cans and logs to keep the fire burning, if only to ensure she was truly gone. The only people who might have protested would have been her mother and maybe her kids. Even her father and brother spoke of her as a hateful, evil person. To this day, they talk about her like her death was a relief. Oh, and I've pissed on her grave twice in the last year and a half since they planted her. I hope she rots in hell for what she did to this family. Story 12. That I miss the man I married, painfully so. My husband is a good man, and he was an incredible boyfriend. But as a husband, things have changed so much that I'm afraid our marriage won't last. Every day feels like it chips away at me. When I got sick and nearly died, it was like a switch flipped in him. He started trying again, being attentive, loving, and supportive. Despite my illness, things felt great between us for a while. But as time went on, he slowly reverted back. Now there's no S, no kisses, no affection. I've caught him talking to other women twice, yet he swears he can't live without me. I work full-time, take care of the kids, and handle 100% of the housework, including cooking. Meanwhile, he sleeps all day and spends all night at the computer. When I try to bring up how I'm feeling, he spirals into self-loathing, saying he's a terrible person and accusing me of bad-mouthing him to my friends to get them to convince me to leave. I haven't told anyone. The moments I feel like I can't take it anymore, he'll say something sweet or loving, reminding me how much he cares about me, and I'm pulled back in. The day I finally built up the courage to have a serious conversation about everything, his brother died. I'm not giving up on our marriage because I know the man I fell in love with is still in there somewhere. But the emotional pain is unbearable, and it's starting to take a physical toll on me. Story 13. My girlfriend bought the most adorable corgi puppy ever. One evening while she was at work, I was watching TV, and the puppy was happily doing puppy things in the same room. At some point, I took a melatonin capsule to start winding down for bed, but didn't notice where I left it. Later, I looked over and saw the puppy next to a chewed-up bottle. My heart sank when I realized it was the melatonin. I picked it up and saw it was empty. Not a single pill left. I panicked as I watched the puppy lying on his stomach, staring at me with those innocent eyes. I frantically Googled if melatonin was dangerous for dogs. Everything I read said it wasn't harmful in small amounts, but nearly the entire bottle was gone. For some dumb reason, I decided to wait it out. I told myself that if he got sick before my girlfriend came home, I'd come clean and take him to the vet. But if he was fine, I'd never say a word. That night, he was just lethargic. I woke up in the middle of the night to find my girlfriend coddling him like a baby, his sleepy eyes glancing at me as she stood rocking him. My heart sank. I asked what was wrong, and she said, "He's just restless," completely unaware of what had happened. Thankfully, he made it through the night and has been perfectly healthy ever since. She still doesn't know. I realize how irresponsible and reckless I was. And it's one of the dumbest things I've ever done. I love our dog so much, and from that day forward, I promised myself to never hesitate or be careless with him again. Story 14. That I'm not sure he's strong enough to be the partner I need as I go through my second round of immunotherapy for stage 4 melanoma. We've only been together 6 months, and in that short time, we've faced some of life's toughest challenges. The sudden death of a parent, both of us experiencing cancer recurrences just a month apart, and the subsequent treatments for both of us. It's been overwhelming, to say the least. I know if we break up, he might be my last partner. Who would want to be with a woman who has stage 4 cancer? But that's not why I'm staying. I'm trying to figure out if our problems are just the result of all the awful circumstances we've been through, or if we genuinely aren't compatible. Dating in your late 30s or early 40s is hard enough, let alone when you have a chronic, life-threatening illness. I'm doing my best to hold on and keep hope alive, but it's getting harder every day. That said, I'm so grateful for spaces like this. The people on Reddit are often incredibly thoughtful, articulate, and empathetic. Sometimes it's just easier to share here than with people in my real life. Story 15. My boyfriend probably already knows this to some degree, but I genuinely don't understand why he's with me. He's gorgeous, charismatic, has a great job, and wants to get married and have a family. He's basically every woman's dream. And then there's me. I have an okay job, but nothing impressive. I'm probably a solid 4 in terms of looks. I'm physically and mentally disabled. Socially, I'm a mess. I call it being socially dyslexic, which is mostly due to my CPTSD. His friends probably hate me. I've overheard some of their comments, and while I know he stood up for me and told them off, I can't help but feel like they look down on me for my awkwardness and appearance. When we first got together, I was hesitant because I felt like he was completely out of my league. There was no way someone like him could genuinely want me, right? But I stuck with it, and now we're approaching 5 years together. I'm so grateful for him, but I can't shake the guilt. I know my past trauma sometimes gets in the way, and I still struggle to believe that someone as amazing as him could truly love me. Story 16. Before my wife and I started dating, I hesitated to show any attraction to her because she and her twin sister worked together in the same male-dominated field. The remarks people made about them were crude and disrespectful. Things like, I can't tell which is which, but it's fine. It's all the same with them. That always infuriated me. Even before we were together, I could tell them apart because they each had their own distinct personalities. My wife even acknowledges now that I've only been confused once, and that was because of a difference in their tone of voice when saying something. I think what helped me the most was that I paid attention to the little things about her, like her mannerisms. For example, when she's deep in thought, she doesn't move her head but glances at an angle with her eyes, tracing a little half circle downward. It's one of those small quirks that made her stand out to me from the beginning. Sure, people say it was easy to mix them up because they wore scrubs at work, but for me, there was never any confusion. She was always uniquely her. Story 17. I was working as a sales manager at a high-end health club when one day I got word that one of the toilets was clogged. No big deal. I called maintenance, as it was a pretty routine issue. Except this time, it wasn't routine. Maintenance called me back to say it was more complicated than expected, and something was stuck deep in the pipes. What followed was 2 weeks of chaos, 3 massive floods, hundreds of dollars spent on repairs, and an eventual decision to take the toilet apart entirely. That's when they found it, a large brown hair clip stuck in the S portion of the pipe. The discovery sparked a realization I'd been trying to ignore. A couple of weeks earlier, I'd misplaced my large brown hair clip. I noticed it was gone because I have incredibly thick hair, and that clip was the only one strong enough to hold it. I'm 99% sure it was mine. I somehow managed to flush it down the toilet without even realizing it, and the entire ordeal, the floods, the expenses, the chaos, was all my fault. To this day, I haven't told my husband. It seems so minor and insignificant, but the sheer embarrassment keeps me from ever admitting it. Story 18. Back in 2008, I was fresh out of school and studying a language in a city a bus ride away from my rural hometown. I was pretty naive back then, having grown up in such a small town. One evening, I stayed out drinking with friends much later than I planned and realized I needed to get home. I caught the last bus and arrived in my town around 10 p.m. Since the local bus service ended at 9 p.m., I had to take a cab partway and then walk the rest of the way home. About 6 blocks from my house, I turned a corner and saw this super sketchy dude ahead. My gut told me he was up to no good, but I decided to keep walking, trying to play it cool and not turn my back. As I got closer, I realized he wasn't much older than me, just a teenager, maybe a couple of years older. For a split second,
I thought he might just be another kid like me, heading home after a night out. But then I saw his hand in his pocket, and that knot of fear hit my stomach. It happened so fast. He pulled out a steak knife, yelled something, and lunged at me, demanding everything I had. He pointed the knife at me while trying to reach into my pockets. I'm not a fighter. I avoid physical confrontations at all costs. But I've always been tall, 2 meters since I was 17, and strong despite being skinny, never more than 70 kilograms, but able to lift twice that. In that moment, instinct took over. I grabbed his knife hand with my left hand and, with my right arm, elbowed his elbow. Somehow, this motion caused him to stab himself in the neck. He jumped back, clutching his neck, and then bolted without a sound. My wallet and phone were on the ground. I picked them up and walked home in a daze, not fully processing what had happened. The next day, it hit me like a ton of bricks. I couldn't stop crying, terrified that I might have killed or seriously injured him. To this day, I've never told anyone about it, until now. Story 19. No longer married, but when I was, I thought my wife was pretty, but not Sai, if that makes sense. I loved her, but her body wasn't great, and she didn't really do anything that I'd describe as seductive or Sai. When she tried, it often felt awkward and had the opposite effect of turning me on. So I lied to her. I told her she had an amazing butt and would grab it often to make her think I was really into it. I must have been convincing because after our divorce, she once made a comment asking if the woman I was dating at the time had a butt as good as hers. I chuckled and replied, "No comment," which she likely interpreted as me being nice and implying her butt was still my favorite. But the truth, my inner dialogue was screaming, "Your butt wasn't even in the top 10 of girls I've dated. This other woman is so much seer than you ever were." Despite this, we get along okay, and there's no point in telling her how I really felt. There's nothing to gain from hurting her feelings just to score some imaginary points. It's better to leave it in the past and move on. Story 20. My boyfriend of 9 months made me climax for the first time today. It's not that he didn't know what he was doing before. He absolutely did. But I've had a load of issues holding me back. I was assaulted when I was younger, and I get flashbacks that ruin intimate moments. On top of that, I have this awful tendency for my mind to self-sabotage, with intrusive thoughts popping up at the worst moments. So, for the longest time, I wasn't able to fully enjoy intimacy with him. But today it happened, and it wasn't just about the physical pleasure, which was amazing. It was about what it represented. For the first time, I felt like I had overcome some of my mental barriers. I feel free, like I've succeeded in starting to let go of some of the bullshit my mind puts me through. I know this might not be the end of it, and it might happen again, but this is such a huge step forward. I'm incredibly proud of myself for making progress, and I'm so grateful for him. He's been nothing but loving, understanding, and patient through all of this. I don't want to tell him how big of a deal this was for me, because I want to keep things light and fun between us. I don't want to make it serious or put any pressure on him. That said, I can't help but feel a bit pathetic for making such a big deal out of this internally. But to me, it really is a huge achievement. Story 21. Very well. Where do I begin? My father was a relentlessly self-improving boulangerie owner from Belgium with low-grade narcolepsy and a penchant for buggery. My mother, a 15-year-old French prostitute named Chloe with webbed feet. My father would womanize, he would drink, he would make outrageous claims, like that he invented the question mark. Sometimes he'd accuse chestnuts of being lazy. It was the sort of general malaise that only geniuses possess and the insane lament. My childhood was typical. Summers in Rangoon, luge lessons. In the spring, we'd make meat helmets. When I was insolent, I'd be placed in a burlap sack and beaten with reeds. It was pretty standard, really. At 12, I received my first scribe. By 14, a Zoroastrian named Vilma ritualistically shaved my testicles. At 18, I went off to evil medical school. By 25, I'd taken up tap dancing, aiming to become a quadruple threat, an actor, dancer. Seems like this might be a humorous or fictional tale inspired by a larger-than-life imagination. Story 22. I once had the perfect opportunity to cheat on an ex. I was working out of town, and they would have never found out. But I stayed loyal, and I never told them about it. Not even when we were breaking up and saying hurtful things to each other. I don't regret staying loyal, but I'll never forget the moment during our breakup when they asked me, What value do you even bring to the table? That question broke my heart. They didn't know about the strength of my character or what I had sacrificed to be faithful, and if they couldn't see my worth, then they didn't deserve me. Today, I'm with someone wonderful. I honestly thought I'd stay single forever, but then the right person came along, someone who values me for who I am, quirks and all. It took time, and we're still working through things like any couple. But for the first time in my life, I feel supported and valued in a relationship. I hope it lasts. I'm trying hard, and I can see they are too. It's a partnership I treasure, and I've never felt this kind of fulfillment before. Story 23. I found my engagement ring before he proposed, so I knew when it was coming. We had just bought a house and were preparing to move in. One day I went over to paint the walls and randomly opened the drawers in the guest bathroom vanity. That's when I saw a ring. My first thought was, oh no, somebody working on the house must have hidden this here and forgot about it. Then I picked it up and I really liked it. I tried it on and realized it fit perfectly. That's when it hit me. It wasn't left by someone else. It was for me. We had a vacation plan, so I figured he was going to propose during the trip. Even though I suspected he'd do it on the hike we'd planned, I was still somehow surprised when it actually happened. Story 24. I work in IT, and sometimes I handle dark sites. Secure locations where you can't bring phones, keys, or any tech with you. There's no internet or WAN access, so you have to be physically on site to get work done. It's not some shady government spy stuff. It's just routine, boring, secure work. Every now and then, I have to work an incident at one of these sites, which leaves me completely out of touch for hours. But about once every couple of months, instead of working, I'll use it as an excuse to take a break. Sometimes I'll hang out with a friend, but more often I'll just sit in my car, eat Subway, scroll Reddit, and watch YouTube in peace. I'm 99.9% sure my wife knows I do this, but doesn't say anything. She probably realizes I need these moments for my mental health. She respects that I work hard to provide for our family and understands that I sometimes struggle with the chaos of home life. She's an amazing woman, and I'm incredibly lucky to have her. Story 25. I love that my husband only opens up and shares his deep thoughts with me and his closest friends. It makes me feel really special to be in his inner circle. He's also great at reading people. If someone says my husband is quiet, it's usually a sign he doesn't like them. He won't push his opinion on me, but I've learned to trust his instincts because they're usually spot on. For example, he really disliked one of my ex-friends. He and his best friend would talk about how desperate for attention she seemed and how something just felt off about her. I didn't see it at first, but over time, all my other friends started complaining about her too, saying things like, I'm not a big fan of X. Eventually, I realized she was disingenuous and toxic, just like my husband had picked up on from the start. What I admire most is that he never forces his opinion on me. He lets me figure things out on my own. But once I decide to cut someone off, he's 100% on board, ready to salt the earth and never look back. I love that about him. It's such a unique mix of patience, intuition, and loyalty. Story 26. I constantly shower my partner with praise. I tell her she's beautiful, shy, kind, and a wonderful person, and I truly mean it. I genuinely feel lucky to have her in my life. But underneath all of that, I carry a deep resentment that I could never admit to her. Her mental health struggles, severe ADHD, anxiety, and depression make her incredibly self-absorbed and selfish at times, and I often hate her for it as much as I love her. She is so conflict-avoidant that she's incapable of standing up for me, no matter the situation. Whether it's with her parents, our friends, or a complete stranger, she stays quiet and does nothing. I've learned I can't rely on her to have my back, and every time it happens, it feels like a betrayal. Our life is another point of frustration. While she's good in bed when she makes an effort, that only happens about 1/8 of the time. Most of the time, she's so passive it feels like a cliche, literally lying there waiting for me to do everything. She assumes the same passive positions, and while I work hard to make sure she has an amazing experience, she averages 6 to 15 orgasms per session, I'm practically responsible for my own arousal because she puts in so little effort. Ironically, she thinks we have an amazing S life. She's also deeply codependent, though she doesn't realize it. She feels like she's doing her part because she handles the laundry and some of the kids' meals, but I do practically everything else. I clean the house, handle the vehicle's legalities, research everything we need, take the kids to nearly all their appointments, sign them up for school, and attend every meeting for our autistic child. She's joined me once. Some of our biggest financial disasters have happened because I trusted her to handle small tasks. For instance, while we were living in a hotel during home repairs, I asked her to cancel our internet. She didn't. 6 months later, we were hit with a $500 bill because the service kept running in our empty house. And all of this stems from the learned helplessness her parents ingrained in her. They set her up for failure, and she struggles with unmedicated severe anxiety, ADHD, and depression. I've tried bringing these issues up with her, but every time I do, she spirals into guilt, depression, and shutdown mode. It's emotionally draining, so I stopped bringing it up. And now I just resent her on a level that I know will never go away. Today, she's driving to visit her parents for a couple of days, and honestly, I'm relieved. I've spent the last 48 hours taking care of every responsibility related to her trip, and I'm mentally and emotionally shutting down from the exhaustion. I know I'm not perfect. I have my own flaws, but I'm none of the things I'm accusing her of. And that's what makes this resentment so painful. Story 27, that I'm not physically attracted to him anymore. I love him deeply. He's an amazing father to our kids, a patient and understanding partner who puts up with my highly strung personality, and he provides for our family. I can't imagine not being with him, but physically and romantically, I just don't feel attracted to him anymore. Over the years, he started eating excessively, so much that I often raise an eyebrow but stop myself from saying anything. It's not my place to dictate how much someone should eat. The weight gain has become noticeable, and while I'm no longer the same person I was when we met, especially after having kids, I've tried to encourage him to make healthier choices for both of us. I've made subtle suggestions like, let's work out together, or I join the gym. Why don't you come with me? I've framed it as something we should do for the kids to set a better example, but he just ignores me. So I've spent the last couple of years accepting that this is who he is now. I love everything else about him, but physical intimacy has become something I dread because I'm just not turned on anymore. Story 28. A few weeks ago, my girlfriend accidentally slept for 20 hours straight after completely burning herself out from working too hard. We've been long distance for a while now, and she's currently living alone in an apartment more than 28 hours away from me. We usually text each other throughout the day. Little updates like, I saw a cute dog on my way to work today. She's an early bird, waking up at 5 a.m. on her own, while I struggle to get up by 10. That day, I started worrying when I hadn't heard from her by 1 p.m. It was unusual. As the hours passed, I became increasingly anxious. My mind spiraled with what ifs, because I had no way to contact her directly or anyone she knew. By 7 p.m., I was seconds away from calling local hospitals in her area to see if they'd admitted her when she finally called me. She was completely oblivious to my panic. I played it off, pretending I was fine and hadn't been freaking out all day. But the truth is, the helplessness I felt was overwhelming, like drowning. Knowing I couldn't do anything if something had gone wrong was terrifying. I don't think I've ever been so relieved to hear someone's voice. Story 29. When we first started dating, we both had super high S drives. It felt amazing to be on the same wavelength. But a couple of years ago, she started taking birth control to help with her painful, debilitating periods, which has been a huge relief for her. It's made them less frequent and much less painful. The problem is that the birth control has completely killed her S drive. She doesn't seem to notice, probably because she doesn't have the best memory, but I do. I still have the same high S drive as before, but now S barely crosses her mind. She's happy her periods aren't as painful anymore, and I'm glad she's not suffering. But I feel like I'm drowning in horniness all the time, with no way to relieve myself. I've gently suggested trying a different birth control or going off it temporarily to see how she feels, but she always says the pain would be too much or that there's no problem with her current setup. I love her so much and don't want her to suffer through painful periods again. So here I am, dying a little inside every day to spare her from that pain. Story 30. I have three things I've been struggling with. The first is that when I try to have conversations with her about things that bother me, like how I end up cooking solo almost every night, and when she cooks, I still have to help or she gets annoyed, or how most of the household spending goes toward things she wants or are related to her interests, she doesn't respond well. Instead of having an adult conversation, She either cries or gets defensive and dismissive. The second is that I'm not sure I love her the same way she seems to love me. She's very expressive and intensely affectionate. She tells these beautiful, heartfelt stories about her love for me, while I struggle to keep up with her level of intensity. I know I love her. I feel her absence deeply when I'm alone or traveling. But her way of expressing love is so much more than mine, and it makes me feel like something is missing on my side. The third is that when I'm feeling depressed or overwhelmed, I can't talk to her about it. She's supposed to be the person I turn to, but she struggles to handle those conversations and refuses to seek help for her own issues that contribute to that. I rely on support services through my work instead, so I don't burden her or risk having a breakdown from stress. I love her, but these issues are frustrating, and I don't know how to fix them without pushing her further away. Story 31. My daughter's hospital hat is one of my husband's most cherished possessions. He placed it on her head just moments after she was born and has held on to it as a keepsake for the past 6 years. He tells the story often, his eyes lighting up as he recalls shielding her eyes from the bright lights, gently placing the hat on her head and whispering, "Daddy never leaves her." But here's the thing. The hat he's kept in a special box, the one we'll both treasure forever, it's a fake. Here's what happened. I had a C-section, and my boss, who happened to be the on-call pediatrician, took amazing photos of the birth, including one of my husband putting the hat on her tiny head. That hat became so special to him immediately. He couldn't stop talking about how much he loved it. On day two in the hospital, the nurse came to take our baby for tests. My husband insisted on putting the hat on her again, even though I suggested we keep it safe in the diaper bag, because it had already gotten a little smudged. He was so sentimental about it that I let it go. Later that day, the hat was gone, nowhere to be found. I knew immediately that it had been thrown away. Those hats are simple and disposable, just scraps of cloth with elastic. Ours was dirty, and I had no doubt it was gone. When I told my husband, his eyes welled up with tears and he started to shake. He was heartbroken. I couldn't bear it. So, despite recovering from major abdominal surgery, I walked down the hall to the nursery to beg for help. The nurse and I searched everywhere, but we both knew the hat was gone. Desperate, I asked if we could make a new one. She grabbed some cloth and we made a perfect replica. I even scuffed it on the floor and used an ink pad to recreate the smudge. When I brought it back, my husband's relief and gratitude were overwhelming. I knew right then that I could never tell him the truth, but he keeps bringing it up. Over the years, he's told that story countless times, how he shielded her eyes, placed the hat on her, and made that beautiful promise. And every time I feel a pang of guilt knowing it's not the original hat. I sound cold, but I love that hat too. It breaks my heart that it's a fake. But in that moment, I just couldn't stand to see him so crushed. So I fixed it. And now I'm stuck with this secret that might just kill me. Story 32. I am jealous of how my wife's career is panning out. Don't get me wrong. I love her to bits. She's amazing, smart, and absolutely fantastic at networking. It's because of her talent for connecting with people that she's managed to break into a field, a sport, that I've been trying to establish myself in for years. She's so natural at it that people remember her and seek her out for work. It's incredible to watch her build relationships that lead to invitations to high-profile events with some of the biggest names in the industry. Sometimes I get to tag along, and I even help her organize her flights and transport, almost like her personal assistant. But there's this nagging jealousy. I know how talented I am, and I want so badly to succeed in this field, yet I just don't seem to have what she has. It stings a little because this is something I've been chasing, and while she's worked hard too, her charisma and ability to connect with people make it seem effortless. I know I benefit from her success. I get a bit of a foot in the door because of her, but it's tough watching her shine so brightly while I struggle to get noticed. She's going to be incredibly successful at what she does, and I'm so proud of her. But sometimes I feel like this quote from Doctor Who sums it up perfectly. Great women are forged in fire. It is the privilege of lesser men to light the flame. Maybe I'm just the lesser man, helping to light her flame. Story 33. I would rather bear the work pain and stress than see her go through anxiety attacks every day. 5 years ago, I was crushed by a forklift. Chronic pain became my new reality, and everything changed overnight. I lost the ability to do things I dreamed of, like playing catch with a future child. I grieve that loss every time I have to say no to my nephews when they want to play. My wife stepped up in a way I'll forever admire. She's been in retail for almost a decade, with four of those years as a manager. After my accident, she became the head of our household, working tirelessly to support us. I'm so proud of her strength, but it's taken an emotional toll on her. Her job is draining, and I see the anxiety it causes her every day. She's incredibly strong, but I don't want her to have to be. I've become comfortable with my pain. It's always there, but I'm used to it. I work over 50 hours a week now, and a management position just opened up. I'm applying for it, not because I want it for myself, but because I want to take on the extra stress so she doesn't have to. If I can bear the physical pain, what's a little more emotional pain if it means she can step down and find peace again? I would do anything to see her smile the way she used to. She's been through so much, especially since my accident happened during the first year of our marriage. And while I know she can handle it, I don't want her to. I want to take that burden off her shoulders. She knows I wish things were better for her, but she thinks I'm going after this position because I want it for myself. The truth is, I just want to see her happy again. This opportunity is my chance to prove that I mean it when I say I'll do anything for her. Story 34, that my whole family was against us getting married. When we started dating, my family didn't think she was a good match for me. They judged her for being quiet, withdrawn, insecure, and overly sensitive. She didn't fit in with my outgoing, opinionated, and judgmental family. I understood where she was coming from, though. Her background explained a lot, and I never judged her for it. But I couldn't stand the way my family treated her, so I stood up for her, even if it meant arguing with my mom multiple times. At one point, I stopped talking to my mom for weeks as a way of showing her that her behavior wouldn't be tolerated. I loved my spouse anyway, no matter what my family thought. Even if she had stayed the same forever, I knew she was the one for me. But I also believed that with time, she'd become more confident, outgoing, and comfortable. And I was right. 4 years later, she's a social butterfly. Therapy, her experiences in corporate America, and our relationship have helped her come out of her shell. Now she connects with my family in ways I never thought possible, and it brings me so much joy that I no longer have to choose between them. Story 35. My wife had an affair earlier this year. I forgave her, and we tried to work through it. I thought we were making progress until last week when I caught her in another affair while I was home battling COVID. We've talked about it, and now she's in therapy. She says she loves me and that the reason for her actions is tied to her self-esteem issues. She admitted those men made her feel good about herself in ways my compliments don't, because as she put it, you're just my husband. It's hard for me to believe she loves me. I can't imagine doing something like this to someone I love. I told her that if it happens again, we're done. But for now, I'm staying, and we're trying to make it work. In reality, though, I feel cold and resentful toward her. I love my son more than anything, and I can't bear the thought of only seeing him on weekends. We live in a mother state, and the idea of not being fully present in his life is unbearable. So I suffer in silence to stay in his life as much as possible. Inside, I'm broken. Mentally and spiritually, I feel shattered. I'm extremely depressed and have had thoughts of suicide, though I would never act on them. My father was abusive and abandoned me as a child, and I'm determined to be the father for my son that I wish I'd had. I've saved all evidence of her affairs in a secret file, just in case it comes to divorce. But I pray therapy helps her, and I hope I can find a way to love her again and feel truly loved in return. Right now, though, I'm just barely holding on. Story 36. I've been keeping this a secret from her, and I can't stop thinking about it. I love her to death and beyond, but the distance between us feels like an insurmountable barrier. As the days go by, the chances of us ever being able to live together drop lower and lower. I don't think we'll ever have a normal relationship, just a long-distance one that keeps stretching on. I still have hope, but it won't be realistic for at least another 5 years. I've thought about breaking up with her because I don't want her to be stuck in this unfair relationship where we can't even hug each other, but I can't do it. I love her too much. I don't know if we'll last until next summer when we both start college. If things don't improve, I plan to break up with her before it gets even harder for both of us. I hate myself for even thinking about it, but I also hate the helplessness I feel in this situation. Story 37. I'm secretly furious that he wants to keep a relationship with his brother. For context, I have severe PTSD. I do my best to manage it quietly without burdening others, and all I ask is to know if someone will be at my house so I can avoid them. It's as simple as a quick text. We live with my mother-in-law, and we were planning to take over the house since it's willed to us. In return, we were going to care for her during the end stage of her life. At one point, we agreed to let my BIL and his family stay temporarily. That's when the nightmare started. My BIL and his wife intentionally triggered my PTSD and did countless other horrible things. They're both malignant narcissists. My so refused to believe his brother was part of it, because he clung to the idea of having a perfect family. When I tried to explain what was happening, he gaslit me, saying I didn't understand what a normal family was like because of my abusive upbringing. After a year, because they refused to move out, my bill confessed, grinning to everything they'd been doing. None of it surprised me, but it devastated my SO. It shattered his illusion of a perfect family and broke the fragile trust I had in him. The aftermath has been devastating. My progress in therapy was undone. I went from almost living a normal life back to barely functioning. My BIL and his wife also recorded us in our bedroom, eavesdropped on us through the backyard security camera, and intentionally deprived me of sleep, among other things. Now, years later, we're cutting our losses and moving away. But recently, my SO told me he could never cut his brother out of his life. I would never ask him to, but I feel so betrayed. I worked so hard to reclaim my life, and two people systematically destroyed that. How could I not be angry? I know I can't make this decision for him. If I did, he would resent me forever. I've already told him that I don't want my BIL or his wife to ever know where we live. All I can do is set and enforce the boundaries I can, while hoping my SO makes the right decision on his own. But the anger and betrayal I feel are overwhelming, and I'm just trying to process it without letting it consume me. Story 38. I keep a lot of things from my partner. Not because I don't trust her, but because she's sensitive, and I don't want her to cry or feel burdened by my past traumas or the things I've seen while working in corrections. The biggest thing I keep from her, though, is the extent of my fetishes. She has some idea, but when I shared even a small part of it, she got upset. I decided to leave it alone after that. She knows there's a lot more, but she definitely doesn't understand how deep it really goes. That said, I don't feel this will cause problems in our relationship. I won't cheat on her or resent her for not being able to meet me where my fetishes lie. We've even had open conversations about me exploring those fetishes with others or having a sewell partner just for that purpose. It was her suggestion, not mine. But honestly, I've already experienced so much of what I wanted to with my fetishes that I don't need to go further. This is the healthiest relationship I've ever been in, and I'm genuinely happy with her. I'm not going to risk what we have for anything. Story 39. My SO has endured a lifetime of pain. She was physically abused as a child by her drunk father, married an alcoholic junkie, raised two kids with him, and then spent a decade being mentally abused by a man with Asperger's. We met 5 years ago at an Al-Anon meeting, and since then, her mother has passed, her ex-husband was found dead in a hotel room, her best friend was diagnosed with terminal cancer, and she's going through menopause. Her trauma has profoundly shaped her. She views S as something other people do, not something couples in long-term relationships prioritize. Her mood swings, shouting, and insistence on being right about everything have worn me down mentally. I came into this relationship already battered by 2 years of living with a violent alcoholic, and now I feel like a shell of myself. I've tried everything, talking, shouting, writing letters, suggesting therapy, and even couples counseling, but nothing changes. She always says she's too busy to address it. After a huge argument about our relationship, though not about my cheating, she started making plans for holidays next year as though nothing had happened. I cheated on her recently with someone at work. This woman has a high S drive like mine, is open and communicative, and makes me feel alive in ways I haven't felt in years. But I don't want either of them. I just want to live alone, focus on myself, and stop being the good guy who's trying to fix everything. When I told my SO I no longer wanted to marry her, something shifted in me. It was like saying it out loud changed how I see our entire relationship. She still thinks the sun shines out of my ass while I'm secretly fing another woman and actively looking for a new place to live. What haunts me most is the guilt. If I leave, I'll just be another person on her long list of people who've let her down. But I'm at my breaking point, and I don't know how much longer I can keep pretending. Story 40. The first time we made out and the first time we had S were traumatic for me. I grew up homeschooled and isolated by Christian parents steeped in purity culture. I was also sexually abused as a child. My partner's older and more experienced, and while he promised to take things slow, I don't think he fully understood how much damage I was carrying. When we made out for the first time, it was overwhelming. He leaned over me while I sat on his couch, and that image is burned into my mind. When I think about it, I cry or shut down. His kissing was far more passionate than I was ready for, and he touched me in ways I didn't expect from my first kiss. I struggled to set boundaries, but even when I said no, he pushed playfully before stopping and apologizing. He was genuinely worried he'd scared me and promised not to take things further than I was ready for. When we had a few weeks later, it was consensual. I wanted it, but I was scared and uncomfortable the entire time. My body tensed so much it hurt, and that's still an issue for me. I've been seeing a therapist and a pelvic floor specialist to work on it, but it's been a long journey. Sometimes I feel anger toward him when I think about those early experiences. They scarred me deeply, but I know he didn't intend to hurt me, so I would never bring it up or make him feel guilty. I just hate that those memories still hold so much pain for me. Story 41. I saw her cat smooshed on the side of the road and moved it into the brush. She'd just gotten him, and when he went missing, she cried for what felt like forever, convinced he had run away. As heartbreaking as that was, I figured it was a better scenario than knowing the truth. Then her landlord, the absolute prick, suggested that the cat had been eaten by coyotes, which had been snatching up pets in the neighborhood. That sent her into a brand new wave of devastation. We were moving in a few weeks, and she grew even sadder at the thought that if he were alive and somehow came back, he wouldn't find us. A few months later, I was working a job delivering pizzas and happened to go back to our old neighborhood. It reminded me of her cat. When I got home, I told her I'd seen two little girls playing on a blanket in the yard, and who was there with them but her cat, looking fat, happy, and content. By that time, she'd already gotten another cat. Though she was a little mad at first, she eventually smiled and said, "I'd rather those little girls have him if he looks really happy. She's my ex now. Even though we don't..."
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Don't get along anymore. I'll never tell her the truth. Not even on my deathbed. That's a pain I wouldn't wish on anyone, and I'm glad she got to believe her cat had a happy ending. Story 42. Her lowest drive is driving me insane. I do everything I can to make her feel loved and supported when I come home from work. I compliment her, make her small gifts, and often take on all the household responsibilities so she can relax. I've suggested everything, massages, toys, exploring fantasies. But in almost 7 years, she's never shared her deepest desires with me. I'm her husband, and it hurts that she doesn't seem to trust me enough to open up in that way. If I'm lucky, she's in the mood once a month. But even then, it's a gamble. Sometimes it's just a BJ, and while she's getting better, it's not exactly great. We've had multiple conversations about this, and she's apologetic because she knows how much S means to me. But she says cuddling is enough for her. She offers to try new things, but never comes up with suggestions herself, leaving me feeling like I'm constantly chasing something that's not there. What's worse, I'm touch deprived. I want her to stroke my back or my face to hold me in the way I do for her, but I don't think she even realizes that I need to be touched too. When the house is quiet, all she wants to do is read her books or watch her shows. It's driving me crazy, but I love her more than anything. I'm trying to adjust, to cope. I've even developed a routine to manage my frustration. I take small breaks at work to relieve stress, and the rest of the time, I just wait. Story 43. I feel deeply guilty for having kids. It was a mutual decision to start a family, and I even went through infertility treatments to conceive. Both of our kids were planned, and I love them more than anything. But the older I get, the more I wrestle with a painful realization. None of us asked to be here. What right did I have to create two lives in a world as messed up as this one? Yes, there's beauty and joy, but this planet is a chaotic, broken place. Even if we lived in a paradise, the truth remains. We all die. And then what's the point? My therapist once asked me, "If you knew what you know now and were given the choice from the beginning on whether to exist or not, What would you choose? My answer was simple. I'd choose to never have existed at all. The weight of existence feels unbearable at times. I can't tell my husband this. No one wants to hear that their partner wishes they'd never existed. I certainly can't tell my kids. They have their own battles ahead of them, and I need to be their strength, their guide, their safe harbor. But inside, I wish I didn't exist. It's a constant battle to reconcile my love for my family with the existential dread I carry. I try to be the strong one, the problem solver, the caretaker, but sometimes the weight of it all feels like too much.